This is The Topic is Trek, episode 33 for Friday, November 30th, 2018. It's the most wonderful time of Bashir. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me, as always, is Mr. Craig Stepp. Hello.
Hey, Clinton. How you doing?
I'm doing great. But we seem to be missing something this time around, because not joining us this week is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Yeah, he's on SETI Alpha 6.
He is. Yeah, this is... No. So I think once again, I threw you for a loop, didn't I? Yeah. I'm trying to think, do I know where Chuck is? He's off traveling somewhere. He's off on business. He's in Vegas,
reminiscing about the Star Trek experience.
Knocking on that wall going, let me in.
I know you're in there.
There's nothing on the other side of the wall, sir. There's nothing there. They took it all away. We're about to get to subspace chatter. A couple of things happened today that didn't even make it into subspace chatter. They released a new trailer for the next short trek, which is coming out next week, The Brightest Star, which is the one that features Saru on his home planet.
I like that they didn't give us a lot of it. You know, it's like you see them out working in like the rice fields or whatever they're doing, and he just has a little voiceover looking up at the sky. I'm like, okay, so I'm really curious to see how they portray his race, because he's talking about, you know, there's a lot of fear, a lot of predatory stuff going on. You know, I'm curious how this all is going to play out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I'm curious. I'm trying to figure out, okay, is this a warp-capable planet? Because he seems to not be sure what's up in the stars. So that's a question. And another question,
I wonder if he's just asking that rhetorically, you know.
Well, yeah, but then you wouldn't wonder. You'd say there's other things out there.
He's waxing poetically or whatever.
I guess. Well, the other thing is that, how long ago is this? I mean, how long was he? I mean, he's been in Starfleet for quite a while, and I'm sure he went to the academy and all that kind of stuff. Well, I'm not sure. I'm assuming. So how far back? You can't tell by the way he looks, because he looks the same as he looks in the series.
Yeah. It's not like he has gray hair in one and not the other or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. And then the other thing that broke today as well, they have a new commercial, which I'm assuming is running on the network for season two of Discovery. And people said, oh, and Spock actually speaks. I'm going, well, we heard Spock speak in, well, say that three times fast. We heard him speak in the last one, but it was a voiceover. And this time, yes, he speaks. He says, yes.
I didn't catch that on YouTube. I'm surprised I didn't see it, but yeah, that's funny. Yes. Oh, okay. The little nuggets rolling right off his tongue.
we'll next time around on The Topic is Trek. Ah, see, I've got a bell this time.
There we go. Yeah.
We will be discussing the Brightest Star. But for now, it's time to go to subspace chatter. And
I was waiting for the sounds. You know how conditioned we are now.
They're all in our heads.
Yeah. Doo-doo-doo-doo. There we go. Okay. Chuck thought excellent. That was funny last time I did that. So.
Well, who's Star laughing Trek- now? I'll probably check again.
So yeah, he probably is. So Star Trek Biology explored in a new book called Live Long and Evolve.
Oh, my.
I wonder if Captain Kirk's involved in this somehow. Anyway, so if you're like me, and I'm reading from the article, you've watched a lot of Star Trek. Yes, I am. Have. If you have even more like me, yes, I am. You'll read the new book, Live Long and Evolve, What Star Trek Can Teach Us About Evolution, Genetics, Life on Other Worlds, by Mohammed A.F. Noor, professor of biology at Duke University and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Evolution, or the Journal Evolution. That's the name of it. And being like me, you'll turn immediately to the chapter 5, Sex and Reproduction, and the Making of a New Species.
Got to have it dog-eared and everything. It's just...
Yeah, I know, right? It comes with a bookmark right there for it. Because ever since you first saw Captain Kirk, I knew he's going to work his way in here, canoodle with a series of apparently female, apparently humanoid organisms, and you've been like, I got to check out the statutes of the statutes of Alpha 3 to see if that's kosher. Closely related species do get it on and can beget offspring. A horse and a donkey can produce a mule. It's true. Sterile one, that. A lion and a tiger can produce a liger.
Oh, yeah, liger, yeah.
Napoleon Dynamite taught us that. That's right. God. Yeah, don't be jealous. I've been on the internet all day. a polar bear and a grizzly can produce a grizzly? I never heard of that one.
A pizzly, yeah, that's a new one.
And a human being and anything and not human can produce a court appearance.
Hey now. Hey now.
Whoa.
Ho. I didn't see that one coming. There we go. Ho.
Deal with humans bonk non-humans regularly, by which I often mean, though I don't know the actual ways and means, in Roddenberry land. Given that interspecies mating is uncommon on Earth, it appears unusually common among humanoid species depicted in various Star Trek series. Noor writes, indeed, he continues, attraction to members of other humanoid species do not seem noticeably weaker in any of the 5 series than attraction to members of one's own species. And I think, you know, besides Kirk, Riker's comes to mind for some reason.
Yeah, I wonder why. I think
he seems pretty loose, you know, when it comes to.
I think it's having the T in your name that is really what sets things off.
That's right.
So, I'm sure we've often wondered that about. There's certain questions that we have that they don't answer, but apparently this book will answer them for you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like. Well, why did you bother with any of the chapters except chapter 5? You should just written chapter 5. That's all people are going to be, you know, going to this book for. But
I'll say, what are the previous 4 chapters about?
Yeah. See chapter 5, see chapter 5, see chapter 5, and see chapter 5.
What's a C illustration in chapter 5? Oh, okay.
Ah, I see. Oh, really? Are you holding it upside down? I think. No, I'm not sure. Maybe you're not. Anyway.
That's how it's done.
Well. From flights of fancy to flights of flights.
There you go.
Our next story comes to us from the Telegraph. And I don't mean like somebody did dots and dashes. It's from the telegraph.com. Star Trek style iconic wind plane hailed as most significant advance in flight since the Wright brothers. Essentially, this plane has a unique new form of propulsion. Let me explain. A revolutionary Star Trek-style electric plane that flies silently and has no moving parts has completed its first test flight in what is being hailed as one of the most significant advances in flight since the early experiments of the Wright brothers more than 100 years ago. The battery-powered plane, which was developed and tested by engineers at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, just right down the road a piece, in the U.S., is not kept in flight by propellers or a turbine, nay, but by an iconic wind, an ionic wind system. The 16-foot aircraft is completely silent, and colliding electrically charged air molecules provide the thrust needed to make it fly, opening the door to new generation of emissions-free passenger aircraft and silent drones. Mm-hmm. Now, the Star Trek connection in here seems to be that the one of the people developing this was fascinated by shuttles or starships on Star Trek that have that kind of blue glow to the nacelles on them. And the wings on this thing are blue. I'm assuming it's the material used for it. What I got confused by, though, is they're talking about how the plane flies. Oh, by the way, you can check out all the contents of this article and all the other articles that we're going to be talking about this evening by going to the show notes for episode 33 over at thetopicistrek.com. So they're charging these different points to make these this ion flow, but it says it doesn't have a battery, so I'm not sure. How is this charge being maintained if it was charged ahead of time? And the article didn't seem to really explain that part of it. And it would take a scientist to explain it, and certainly I'm not one. But you can read the entire article. There's also a video where you can see the thing in flight. I've looked at several different videos of the thing in flight, and I think the one in this article is probably the worst, but it's also got the most information. Yeah. So that's the one I put in. Because in this video, it looks like they're launching it off of a like a slingshot, and sending it flying. I'm going, well, you've made a glider. Congratulations. But some other videos that I've seen show it flying straight across like the gymnasium or the floor of the testing area. So it does seem to have more self-powered flight, if you will.
Well, it maintains its own flight once you take it off. It's like, well, some of the drones that the military uses, they kind of shoot it off and like off a little launch platform or a platform, like a rod or something, you know, they shoot it off and then it kind of maintains its own flight. My thing was, if this is a thing is just charging the ions in the air to move, I imagine it has to be pretty light. So I don't see how a passenger aircraft would come about this. I don't know if it'd have enough power.
Yeah, it's very, very spindly looking. Essentially, you have the wings and then a series of rods across and just in a frame to hold all that together.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose, I don't know, look at the original Wright Brothers plane going, well, how are you going to get more than one person in that thing?
So well, actually, they were worried about the one person in that thing.
That's right. That's right. And you couldn't get flight insurance because, well, anyway.
Hey, on a side note,
okay.
I've been to Kitty Hawk, and I look. You can see the rail that they used for where they took off and everything. And it's actually pretty fascinating. If you've never been to Kitty Hawk, to at least go see. It's not much. It's like a metal, you know, almost like a train rail, like one, and they had a wheel on it so they could, you know, take off. Anyway, I'm sorry on a tangent. I was just thinking back about when we went there. It was really cool.
No, that's fine. I think they also have markers where, like, this is where the first one landed, this is where the second one landed, that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see the rail that they use. It's still sitting here in the ground. There's also a hill. Well, the reason that they did it there is because the winds that come off the ocean is pretty steady, so they could get a little lift, you know, from the air, and it's always a little windy there, so which is makes sense what they do. Anyway. There's right. a big monument there. It's huge. It's like a, it looks like it's shaped like a big wing. You can go walk around and check it out. Anyway, well, they got a museum and all that stuff.
It's a good thing they flew from there because there was already this monument, and so they could just very convenient.
Yeah, instead of moving it somewhere else, let's just do it here.
Sounds good. And earlier we were speaking about SETI Alpha 6, which I don't think it's there anymore, but we have our next story is related to that very subject.
That's why I said Chuck was there, because it's going to explode at some point. Anyway, so Nicholas Meyer, director of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, was one of the more high-profile Trek veterans brought in to develop Star Trek Discovery. In a new interview, Meyer talks about his time working on the show and gives a status update on the other show, which, to be honest with you, I almost forgot about because we hadn't heard so much about it,
right?
That he was working on. So he said, speaking to Trek Movie, the website, in the summer of 2007, Nicholas Meyer first revealed that he was working on a Star Trek project outside of Discovery, and in May of this year, he gave more details, saying it was a 3-episode limited series, but was on hold at the time. Subsequently, CBS announced plans to expand the Star Trek TV franchise, with Variety reporting that a limited series tied to Khan Noonien Singh was one of the possible shows under consideration. In the months since then, CBS has announced an ongoing series featuring Picard returning in the role of Jean-Luc Picard. I'm sorry, Patrick Stewart returning.
Yeah, they're one and the same. It's fine.
Well, they've kind of blended together in an animated sci-fi series called Star Trek Lower Decks. So far, there's been no official word on Meyer's Khan series moving forward. At San Diego Comic-Con, Alex Kurtzman, who was in charge of expanding the Star Trek universe on TV, spoke to Trek Movie positively about the idea of a Khan series and a Picard series, which hadn't been announced at the time, saying, "I mean, they sound super cool. I'm a huge fan of both stories. It'd be really cool to see something like that." Now, in a lengthy career-spanning interview with the YouTube channel Midnight's Edge, Meyer provided an update on the show, the Khan show we were just talking about, including confirmation for the name of the series. So, quote, this is Nicholas Meyer's quote.
Say it in his voice.
Yeah. I don't know. Let me look at his face. No, I can't figure it out.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so he says, "I was commissioned to write three-night event, and that's what I did. It was called SETI Alpha 5. That's not where Chuck's at. And I don't know the current status. It's been up in the air. Partially, there was a lot of confusion between CBS, and there were big upheavals in CBS. And while they sort of didn't know who was in charge, they also didn't know that they were going to do a SETI Alpha 5, or they didn't know what they're going to do with it. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I haven't heard from them in some time."
It's interesting. I mean, when you think about this, here's Nick Meyer. He's written this thing. It's sitting there, and CBS says, "And we're announcing we want to do all these new things, you know, to have more Star Trek on CBS." And he's probably saying, "Hey, I'm next. All right, let's go. Yeah. Here it is, the big announcement, a Jean-Luc Picard series." Oh, okay, not that one. Maybe next. "And we're announcing another thing. And here it is, an animated series." No, not that. Maybe next. "And rumor is it's going to be a Section 31 series."
Always the bridesmaid.
But I think the article goes on to say that he sees now that it's possible that this idea of a 3-hour thing doesn't really fit in with their plans, that it's just too short.
I don't care. I'd be down for it. Wouldn't you?
I mean, to me, even when you had miniseries on television, usually they're more than 3 episodes, aren't they? They're, you know, it's like a 5-night event or something like that. 3 seems to be this odd.
Well, I remember
time.
The first time I remember seeing a miniseries like that was like, I remember Roots.
Right.
That was the first famous or big one. And then I remember they had from time to time those on TV, you know, almost like made for TV movies.
Right. They had,
what was the one with Farrah Fawcett with the burning bed or something?
Oh, was that a miniseries? I remember that being a movie. I didn't realize it was a miniseries.
Maybe it was a movie, but then anyway. Yeah, you probably remember. You're older than me. Probably remember.
So I've obviously forgotten everything. That, but yes, but again, those seemed like they ran for quite some period of time. They would, I'm not sure that Three Nights was enough then. And I can see where CBS would, or CBS All Access would be saying, well, that's a big investment for something that's relatively short.
I think it would be, it could be well received. It's streaming. We're talking about streaming here, you know? So you don't, of course, that they would release it, you know, 3 days.
Right.
But still, I think that would be really cool. Because I know people got into the miniseries back in the day. We don't really have them much anymore. Another one. In the 80s, the nuclear disaster one.
Which Nicholas Meyer directed, right? Well, no way. Yeah, I mean, was The Day After a miniseries? Because he directed The Day After, right?
That's television. What I was thinking. Yeah, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that. Yes, he did. Directed by Nicholas Meyer. Wow. Talk about that's my tie-in, Clinton.
Bringing it all back. Bringing it all around.
Yeah. I forget. Was it a movie or was it a 3-episode thing?
I think it was a couple of nights. Definitely. That's the way I remember it. That, you know, you have the lead up to the disaster, and then you have the follow up of what happens the next day and the days after that to people. Actually now, probably if I was to look at it again, I remember even thinking at the time, they're not being graphic enough in this depiction of what happens afterwards. And they probably had standards that they had to meet about, well, we can't really do too much.
What, the day after?
Well, yeah, as far as the effects on people surviving the nuclear blast.
That aspect of it. Yeah. But hey, it did have an effect on, you know, on Russia.
Well, that's the whole reason for the nuclear test ban. Nicholas Meyer, you've convinced us. We must stop all these things.
Yeah. I mean, it had an effect. That's what I'm saying. It had an effect on a lot of people. Oh, wait a minute. Why are we talking about
that? I don't know, because on this show, the topic is Trek. We tend to ramble, but that's okay, because who's going to stop us? Chuck's not here. But we'll move on to our next story, which is something that I certainly was not aware of. These days, it seems like Pokemon is blowing up bigger and bigger. Well, that I am aware of. Mm-hmm. My wife does Pokemon Go. The franchise is living large with its latest game, and fans are riding the high of Detective Pikachu's first trailer. Now fans are digging deeper into Pokemon to keep the hype train going. And it seems one impressive Easter egg has resurfaced. After all, Pokemon has shown itself to be a diehard Star Trek fan, and readers cannot believe they didn't know that until now. The whole thing dates back to a complicated piece of manga history, The Electric Tale of Pikachu. You remember that one? You think you did the electric slide in that one?
I've read it a million times.
Yeah. Stands as one of Pokemon's most well-known stories, and it introduced fans to, wait for it, Jean-Luc Pikachu. And here's a quote from somebody. People reacting to the Detective Pikachu movie act like it's the most ridiculous thing that's come from the franchise, as if there isn't a Pikachu whose canon name is Jean-Luc Pikachu. You know, like Jean-Luc Picard, the captain of the USS Enterprise D. Does that ring a bell? Oh, yes, it does.
Yeah.
And then it shows a picture of, well, if you click on the tweet, it will show you a picture of the drawing, and there is Pikachu with the next generation badge, or Jean-Luc Pikachu badge on him. And it's silly, but it was something I was not aware of. So I don't know if there are any other Easter eggs with regards to Pikachu and Star Trek. If people know of any, please feel free to let us know. You can post something on our Facebook page or or send us a tweet and let us know, oh, you forgot this other Pikachu thing. Didn't you know this, that Pikachu, that Pokemon over there was bald? Clearly that's another reference to Jean-Luc Picard. No.
It's a hairless Pokemon.
I don't think that's how it works. But anyway.
Wait, you don't play Pokemon Go?
I do not. Bonnie, my wife, she plays it and she knows all the different Pokemon and the different, you know, what they evolve into and those type of things. But I just go, oh, okay, that's the name of the, and the names are bizarre. They kind of sound like what the thing looks like in a way. It's, well, if you're into Pokemon, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not into Pokemon, you don't know what I'm talking about. That's okay, because I don't even know either.
What? Hey, have you not paid attention to any names in Star Trek?
Well, I'm not sure there's any Pokemon have like a one letter and then an apostrophe and then a bunch of, anyway.
Yeah.
But let's get back, because actually, although we went off to Pokemon and Pikachu, really the topic is Trek. And so we want to know more about some things that that are involved with Star Trek that are part of the legend.
There we go. Bringing it back home. So everything you need to know about Section 31, Star Trek's sinister Starfleet secret.
Ooh.
All right, so brace yourself.
It's not so secret now, is it?
Yeah, ripping the Band-Aid off. Exposing it. No, that wouldn't be the good. That wouldn't be a good analogy. Turning on the lights. There you go. Something like that. Anyway, although Star Trek predominantly set in a utopian future, where humanity has solved its problems and ventured into the stars to explore the cosmos and forged peaceful new alliances, every once in a while, the series takes a shadow, You think they're difficult. Every once in a while, this series likes to show a dark mirror to the price of maintaining paradise, and Starfleet does that with Section 31. First introduced in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, sixth season, Section 31 has made an appearance in Enterprise, the alternate timeline Kelvin reboot. That's right, yeah, in Star Trek Into Darkness, and most recently, Star Trek Discovery, with Michelle Yeoh's mirror version of Philippa Giorgio. Joining the clandestine group for the show's second season. And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen that little deleted scene before the second season, I think we talked about it here on this show.
We have. So yeah. You've been spoiled already.
Yeah, so too bad. And even a whole spinoff show with her that could be following the organization exploits, and Nicholas Meyer still waiting on his phone call.
That's right. Maybe he just wants to be in the Jean-Luc Picard series now.
Yeah. So these appearances have made Section 31 one of the darkest costs of the deep war, the Deep Space Nine's back half, that war that plunged itself into, and more of a dirty secret that has always existed beneath the ideals of Starfleet and the Federation. But if you actually want to know what they do, here's all you need to know. So you ready to go through the whole thing?
Well, I don't think we need to cover all of it, but I mean, it gets into, as mentioned, all these different permutations of us seeing Section 31 in the different franchises. You know, I was kind of surprised, actually, that this has had the legs that it's had. I don't know whether there's a comment on the Times that, well, you know, utopia has to have a darker side, and well, this seems perfect. And so you always pull out Section 31 is something you can go to, because, you know, they don't live by any of the rules or regulations of, you know, the Federation or Starfleet. They're just kind of out there doing what they think is best to protect the Federation.
Well, I could totally see something like this existing, you know, somebody, even today, you know, they're, you know, the government's got something going on that nobody really knows about or really should know about, you know, whether they think they're keeping things safe or doing the best that they should be doing, you know, under the radar, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean,
so this makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, when it was first introduced in Deep Space Nine, which I think was the I think the episode that got introduced was the one where they were testing Bashir to see if he was a spy. But they talk about it being just a sentence or two in the Articles of the Federation. I'm thinking, what guy said, you know, I can interpret this this way. Let's set up our own organization, people. Sounds good to me. And who funds it is a, another interesting question that I'm not sure we've ever gotten into.
Clinton, they don't have money in the future.
Well, that's true. So
they just replicate whatever they need.
That is true. So many questions. So we need to have this Giorgio series so we can have these questions answered or probably not answered. But so I think it adds a flavor to Star Trek, but you know, I don't want it to be overpowering. I don't want it to be too much of that spice is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of question whether or not we really want to have a whole series that's devoted to that. I think in small bits, it's good.
A miniseries, a limited series, like we were just talking about.
Yeah, like a 3-night event. Nick, we got an idea for you. Scrap that SETI Alpha 5 thing and get to work on this.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, maybe they blew up SETI Alpha 6.
Oh, they were doing some experiments.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's see.
You know, I just started thinking about something. Okay, I'm looking at this guy. I think this is from Discovery. Yeah, Discovery, one of the security guys there. Okay, so in the future, if you don't have money and the society is more on improving yourself, you know, and contributing to a better society, would you want to be a security guard?
Well,
I guess everybody's got their own skill set.
Yeah, I was going to say, would you want to be somebody that was like sweeping up the floors in some place? I mean, assuming they don't have some sort of automated futuristic Roomba to do it. I mean, so there's some jobs that people have to do it. Yeah, I've wondered about that myself going, well, you got to really love this because you're not getting paid to do it. I mean, although they do have Federation credits, right? I mean, they get used to exchange for things because let's go back all the way to Cyrano Jones. He's buying and selling, well, he's selling the Tribbles, but for an exchange of, you know, some type of credit. So I guess you earn credits, but it's different than money. I'm not sure how it's different than money, but I guess maybe, I don't know.
Hey, Anthony Alvor, how'd you get this security job? Well, I used to stay at home and draw my crayon cartoons, but I just got bored.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, well, I drew a picture of this turtle, and they said my career should be a security guard.
Yeah, you're going places, kid.
I should have drawn the pirate instead. Anyway, let's go on to our next story. You got that one, huh?
Yeah. Oh, I remember those things. It was like the pirate, a turtle, and there was something else. It was like three of them. It was like a placement thing.
Kids ask you for the Art Institute.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, kids ask your parents about that one. All right, so our next story is related to all sorts of things because I had forgotten just how many of these there were. This comes to us from space.com. It's the Ethan Peck, Leonard Nimoy, and every actor who has played Spock on Star Trek. Now, your mind first goes to just a couple of people. You know, you think of Zach, you think of Leonard. You know, you might be thinking of the new person playing it, Ethan Peck. But this slideshow, and I'm afraid it is one of those slideshows, but it goes through all of the different actors. We have the person who voiced Spock in the animated series. We have the kids and the young men who portrayed Spock in different ages in Star Trek III. You have the young boy who played young Spock in the 2009 movie. You know, then you have Zach. So there's like all these different people. I just had forgotten how many this iconic role that's associated really with one person has been played by a lot of people.
Yeah. And so I remember, well, I was, my immediately thought of actors that I didn't really, I wouldn't recognize, you know, were the ones where Spock was aging on Genesis. But I didn't think about the other ones.
Right. And some of them you only see for a couple of seconds.
Oh yeah. Young Spock in 2009, of course. And yeah, cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of Spocks out there. It's a multiverse of Spocks. Enjoy yourself. So yes, all those Spocks would take up a lot of space. But speaking of space, and we do on this show because the topic is Trek, we have a story about a use of space.
Yes. Reusing of space. How about that? So this is a little snippet out of the whole article about Tim Ford over on Memory Alpha, but I found this on Reddit and I was like, wow, I had no idea. So did you know that TNG's Tim Ford was set was reused to build Voyager's mess hall, ready room, and briefing room? And before that, it appeared in Star Trek VI as well. So the Tim Ford set was redressed to serve as a concert hall in TNG Sarek episode and a theater in the Nth Degree and Frame of Mind. It was also heavily redressed to represent the office of the president in the United Federation of Planets, which that kind of blew my mind in itself in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. I mean, it blew my mind when I read that. After filming on Star Trek Generations was completed, the set was refurbished to become the mess hall of USS Voyager on Star Trek Voyager. In that case, its windows were flipped upside down and used in the captain's ready room and briefing room. So this person says he never knew that the Enterprise D was living on in Voyager the whole time. So he had to share. Hmm. Yeah, if you go to Memory Alpha, they go into a little more detail about all that. But yeah, that's pretty interesting because it's not a very interesting room. It's just a huge area.
Right.
But I guess if they already had it built, and it was around that time when TNG and Star Trek VI and Voyager was coming around, so it makes sense that they would reuse something like that.
It's interesting. It gives some insight in Janeway's ready room. She has that two-tier effect. So that's just a reuse of that second level that was in a 10 forward.
Do you know where a couch and stuff is?
Up near the windows.
Yeah.
Where she has stuff. So they use that part. I don't think there's not that two level thing going on in the mess hall on Voyager though. So they just took that part of the set away.
Take that tier out.
Yeah. We don't need that. Get rid of that. We'll prop it against the wall. We'll use it for something else later on. Don't worry about it. It's going to be an alien surface for something or other. I didn't realize. I mean, I know that there you could clearly see different sets from the Next Generation that were used in the Star Trek movies, like Picard's ready room is also the room where they're having dinner. Mm-hmm. The Klingons and Kirk are having dinner on the Enterprise. But I didn't really piece together that the president's office was also that same set.
It makes sense, I guess, because he had those big windows behind him.
Right. The thing always strikes me about that scene in his one of those scenes in his office, and I want to say that it was Rene Auberjonois, I think, was the person that came in for this, that they had a rescue plan that they were going to use to rescue Kirk and McCoy.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a deleted scene, and they come out, and he comes out with, like, an easel with paper on it.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Here's how we're going to draw this.
You do know what century it is, right? This is what you're coming in with?
Hey, I got news for him. Even today, we use PowerPoints all over the place.
Yeah, I think you need to rethink that whole. I think that maybe they said, yeah, let's cut that. I don't think that's going to work so well.
Hey, is it me or is Kurtwood Smith in the running for most Star Trek characters he's played with, like Jeffrey Combs?
Oh, could be. Could be.
I mean, he's been at every time you turn around, it's like there's Kurtwood Smith doing something. He was a Andorian. He was president.
Well, there's a small group of actors that have played several parts. We were just speaking about Section 31, and one of the actors, I think it was in Section 31, played several parts as well. I think there's probably some site that goes, most actor who's played most roles in Star Trek. And yeah, there are some people they just go to again and again and again. I'm assuming they're people they like working with. So they said, well, this time you're going to be this kind of alien, and this time you're going to be that kind of alien. And they go say, it works for me. As long as there's a paycheck, I'm in.
Here you go. This is another tangent, but he was, of course, the president in Star Trek VI. He was Thrax in Deep Space Nine, fifth season episode Things Past. He shared scenes with Rene Auberjonois in both productions. In 1997, he played Anorax on Star Trek Voyager.
Okay.
Year in Hell, which I like those two by those two episodes. Year in Hell. Smith filmed his scenes. His uniform was sold online at the It's a Wrap sale auction on eBay.
Yeah, and as you were going over that, I was also looking, and sure enough, on IMDb, it's not loading right away here, but it's actors who played multiple characters on Star Trek. Of course, we've got Majel Barrett,
mm-hmm.
Brent Spiner. I'm not sure if. So we've got so right. So he played Data, and he played Dr. Sung. He played Lore. He played B4. Mm-hmm. And he played the other Dr. Sung in Enterprise.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jeffrey Combs, who we've talked about. Susie Plaxen, she played Lieutenant Salar, who was a doctor on Star Trek The Next Generation. She also played Worf's wife. I'm not sure, but... she played a female Q. She played a character named Tara in Star Trek Enterprise. Obviously, Michael Dorn played three different characters. It was two different characters, right? Because he played Worf.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other character that he played was his ancestor in Star Trek.
Six. His grandfather, wasn't it? I think, or something like that.
Yeah, of course, David Warner played a bunch of different characters. Mm-hmm. So there are several people that have played multiple characters. James Cromwell played a bunch of different characters as well.
He did? I remember I was watching one just the other day, and he had a lot of prosthetics on his face, and it took me a minute. I was like, oh, okay. you clue in to, oh. You know what I mean? You don't recognize them right off the first until they start speaking. Well, he's one that you can identify when he starts speaking.
Right. So, yeah, definitely in that pantheon of people that have played a number of characters. And speaking of characters, tying it back in again here, we've got a whole bunch of characters in a new game. That's right. Star Trek Fleet Command just launched as we're recording this yesterday. It's available. I know I have it on my Android phone. I'm imagining it's also available for iOS.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you a bit about it. While the future of Star Trek IV remains unclear, the story of Star Trek's Kelvin timeline seems set to continue in Star Trek Fleet Command. Star Trek Fleet Command is a new mobile strategy game revealed earlier this month. The game takes place in the Kelvin timeline of the rebooted Star Trek movies. Mike Johnson works as a writer on the game's story. In a Q&A session on the Starfleet Command Facebook page, Johnson revealed that Fleet Command would push the story of the Kelvin timeline past where Star Trek Beyond left off. So he's going beyond
Beyond?
Beyond, yes.
Okay.
The game is indeed set in the Kelvin universe, Johnson says. It starts just before Star Trek Beyond. Our story will encompass the events of Beyond, and then we'll go, and then his quote is Beyond.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of Beyonds in there.
I don't think you've had a chance to play the game any, Craig.
Briefly, I did probably about as much time as you said. I think
yeah.
You said earlier you told me 5 minutes, and I was like, I played with it for a few minutes, and I destroyed a couple of ships. I was like, okay,
let's start. But the enemy, right? I mean, not like your own ship.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't accidentally set off a photon. And
oops.
We're in space dock. Sorry, dude.
Yeah. I think the farthest both of us got was just part of the tutorial on, you know, how to do things. I was mentioning to Craig ahead of time that I'm not sure about this game. It's one of those games where I play the tutorial and the tutorial leads you around so much that when they let you go out on your own, you have no clue what you're supposed to do because it's no longer just these big arrows saying, do this touch now.
Hit this. Yeah.
And it's a game. You have space battles in it, although you don't get in really close to the space battle. You're sort of seeing those from, an overhead view, and you don't control the actual ship within the battle itself, but you build up fleets, you build up a space station, you recruit crews to it. Now you start the game as just someone who's in that universe. You're not tied to the Federation, the Klingons, or the Romulans, which appear to be the three races that are the majority of the story. And I guess you can either go with one of those groups or just be on your own and maybe get people from all three of those other groups to join you. It was weird because I'm very used to playing the Star Trek Timelines game.
Right.
And the Star Trek Timelines game is all CBS properties. So you have all of the television shows from TOS through Discovery on that, and you open it up and it plays the Star Trek, the Next Generation, or Star Trek, the motion picture theme, pick whichever one you think it is. And it's all based around characters from television. And you start to play this game and it launches with the original score from Star Trek 2009. And you're being led around the tutorial by Scotty, and it's a 3D rendering character of Simon Pegg's Mr. Scott. So it was very unusual to me being, you know, having played the other timeline or the other, you know, characters for like a year and a half now to suddenly be in this universe or this timeline with this game.
Hey, whoa, you're messing me up here.
That's right. Too many timelines. Yeah. I'm definitely going to devote some more time to it before I do any sort of review on it. I was toying around with the idea of waiting and doing it for my next year's Dog Days of Podcasting, but by then the game will be like a year old or like the better part of a year old. So I think instead I will play it and try to give a much better review of the game on a future episode of The Topic is Trek, because The Topic is Trek.
Yeah.
Now, we've covered all the stories that we could cover in the amount of time that we have, but, you know, there were a ton more. I'm not sure how you measure a ton on the internet, but there were a lot of other stories that we did not get a chance to get to. However, fear not, because if you go to the show notes for episode 33 over at thetopicistrek.com, you'll be able to find links to all these other stories.
Yeah, a ton on the internet is about, I guess, 15 links.
Okay. So there you go. Now, you know, when somebody says, it was a ton there, you know exactly what the metric is. You can say, that wasn't a ton. That was a 0.5. That was a half ton. That was 3 tons.
Remember on the IT internet crowd, they were like, hey, the internet is kind of light.
Yeah.
You remember that? Oh, no.
Yes. The little box. Yeah. So be careful with that little box. Don't drop it. You break the internet.
Yeah. The elders will be unhappy.
All right, now we're going to go out on our main mission now that we're through with subspace chatter. And this time around, we're getting close to the holidays, clearly. And we thought, as a service to all of you, what we would do is we would go out and look for interesting gifts of a Star Trek nature that you could get for yourself or for a loved one or for a Secret Santa or to annoy someone, whatever, however you want to look at this. We've come up with some fine, fine gifts. I'm going to let Craig start things off with his first pick of a lovely, lovely Star Trek gift for the holiday season.
Yeah, and this is over on eBay. This is the Join Starfleet 50th Anniversary TV show poster, which I thought was interesting. It's got three female characters on the front of it, yet it says boldly go where no man has gone before.
I don't, okay.
Okay. Anyway, it's just a nice poster. I just thought that was funny.
Yeah. I would have gone with the Picard No One. I think I would have chosen.
Yeah. That. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I think that would have worked much better. So that's a lovely poster. What I have is my first pick, and I found this over on Amazon. I'm sure you can find it other places, is a Star Trek Gorn gnome statue. And in this one, we have a typical lawn gnome, except he's all in gold, definitely a Kirk uniform, and his hat is that gold color. He's on the ground, and the Gorn is about to, you know, skewer him with a spike. Clearly, this is the lovely sort of thing you want to have in your garden. It's a conversation piece that no one should go without. There's also a complete set. You can have a red shirt gnome. You can have a Worf gnome. You can have a Picard / Santa gnome. You can have a Riker gnome, and the Riker gnome has, of course, a leg up on something. I guess the chair is not included.
Right.
So there's all sorts of, you can have a Borg.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. With a beard?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're gnomes. What can I tell you?
Oh, I guess Picard's got a beard, too. So, okay. Got it.
So that's my next pick, is the Star Trek Gorn gnome statue. What's up next for you, Craig?
By the way, that one gnome that's got a red shirt and is laying down says, join Starfleet, they said. It'd be fun, they said. He's got, like, the red shirt. That's funny. This one's for anybody of all ages. This is a Star Trek The Next Generation Lieutenant Thomas Riker action figure. Funny, it looks just like William Riker, but whatever. And it comes with a stand and various, I started to say purses, but it looks, you know, little bags and stuff. And he's got a phaser with a rainbow. Look at that. It looks like it's just pouring. Like the phaser was a liquid.
So this is pre him becoming traitorous, working with the, you know, was he working with the Maquis?
He worked at the Maquis. Yeah, what did he go to? He left the Enterprise, and
I know people are screaming. I'm sorry, I can hear the people screaming. I want to say that's, and he, you know, granted he did like turn himself in at the end, but. He went bad. So we'll assume that this is pre-bad Thomas Riker.
Yeah.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
But he's got fully articulating arms.
He does. Amazing. A fully articulated beard, I'm sure, as well.
It's always articulating.
All right. So that is a lovely, lovely thing you can get for someone. But, you know, well, you're thinking to yourself, well, what if my friend has a pet? You know, I want to give them something Star Trek, but they have a pet as well. Well, good news for you. And this comes to us courtesy of Etsy. Where else? This is a Star Trek The Next Generation female pet portrait. That's right. You can have your pet painted as if they are on Star Trek The Next Generation. You can go through, again, you can check the links over at thetopicistrek.com. You can see several examples of people who submitted pictures of their dogs or cats and had them drawn as if they were in Star Trek The Next Generation. This person is in a gold uniform from Next Generation. We have another dog that's in...
With the name on the first one.
Oh, sorry. The name of the first one is Natasha. So I you know, there you go.
Old Easter egg there.
We have a Captain Bowie, and he's now, this one confuses me because it's a dog. He's got a hypo, and he's got, is that a phaser in his other hand? I'm not quite sure.
No,
but
it looks like the scanning device that McCoy
okay.
had.
So, and he's got the patch as if he's in sciences, but he's wearing a gold uniform. So the dog is, well, now you think about it, the dog only sees in gray. So clearly it doesn't matter to the dog which color the uniform is.
Yeah. Actually, they have colors, but then, yeah, all the dogs in Starfleet are colorblind, so nobody really knows which shirt they're wearing.
So if you want that, if you want to have your pet pictured in a Starfleet uniform, you know where to go. But
and by the way, I see other... What were you going to say? I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, they you can cover other franchises as well. But remember, on this show, the topic is Trek. Sure. So we won't talk about those other people.
Yeah.
All right, what's next on your list?
Well, this one is a Star Trek Femme Fatale's 7 of 9 PVC statue. Which, you know, for any Star Trek fan.
Is it fully articulated as well? I mean, the Riker one was like, kind of articulated. I don't know.
Well, she's standing in front of the you know, the recharging unit, but it's 7 of 9. She didn't have to articulate anything.
That's right. She used telepathy. That's what you're saying, right? That's exactly where he was going with that one. Yeah. She was part of the collective, trying to keep us above board here. Anyway, let's move on from that. So that's great. If you want to get that for someone, but you know, I'm thinking, well, what if the person is a golfer and you want to have something for the person that's a golfer Trust Entertainment Earth to have you covered. In this case, this is the Star Trek Tribble Golf Club cover. That's right. It is a cover you put over your golf club and there is a tribble on top of it. So if you don't want to get the person just one of those, obviously, though, you want to have one for every single club that they have in their bag. So you have this whole tribble thing going on every time they go out onto the greens.
That actually looks like the heat miser from the.
Yes. Cause it's a gold one here. So yeah. Absolutely.
The heat miser. Yeah.
If you're looking to recreate that as well, I suppose you can go in that direction with it. So
yeah,
it's many, many uses. Okay, what do we have next?
Actually, this one, I honestly consider picking it up for myself. This is from the Star Trek starships. This is Captain Proton's rocket ship vehicle. And this is from Entertainment Earth, which is where the last item was as well. But they do kind of like Eagle Moss, you know, where they have a magazine and a subscription set up with, and you get a spaceship to go with it. So you can see Captain Proton's ship. There's on that's on the cover of the magazine, and it's a model you would put on your desk. It's pretty cool. It's only like $22. It's not too bad. Oh wait, temporarily out of stock.
Well, but that's okay. Cool. Just get the Flash Gordon one. Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, you know? Pretty much.
If you're
the Captain Proton stuff. I thought it was pretty cool.
It was. Like that robot. You know.
Yeah.
Boxy but safe or something like that.
Wasn't it 7 of 9 that walked in and disabled it in like 2 seconds? What's the challenge in this thing?
So you can have a spaceship, but if you have a spaceship, then you want to take your luggage with you onto that spaceship. Clearly, well, fear not, because you can also get, and this is available from Amazon as well as other places I'm sure, Star Trek, the original series uniform luggage tag. And so it's a luggage tag. It's got a Star Trek cord on it to attach to your luggage. And then it's a gold colored one. It has the Delta shield on it and that slash of black up at the top to kind of indicate that's where the,
almost like the shoulder part of their shirt.
Right. And braid.
Yeah.
Right. And you have braid there to indicate rank on as well. Mm-hmm. Boy, this is certainly rank. But no, what I meant to say was, you see, you can pick this up and, every place you go, perfect for the Star Trek cruise. If you're going on that, have this, and you'll be, I was going to say, normally this would set your luggage apart from other people, but it, probably in the Star Trek cruise, it would confuse your luggage with every other person.
That's true.
So there is that available. What's next on our list?
Actually, I'm sure Michael Dorn wish he had this. This is the Star Trek, the Klingon sun stashes, which instead of a stash, it's more like the Klingon forehead. So you put on these sunglasses, obviously little cheap sunglasses, and it's got Worf's hairline, well, not Worf, but a Klingon's hairline with the big old turtle forehead. So you just pop it on. I mean, you know, you can look cool with the top down in your car going down the road.
Absolutely.
With
I mean,
Klingon forehead.
it's certainly something that will get people's attention.
Yeah, much like a horseshoe crab.
Well, you
on your head.
But not everyone has access to horseshoe crabs, so this is a good alternative.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's awesome. You can get that for somebody, and they can instant costume for next Halloween. Congratulations for that one. But for the everyday use, I think we were talking earlier about the fact that really they don't have money in the future.
Right.
But right now we are burdened and saddled with the fact that we do have money. And when you have money, when you go to the store, what do you get? You get change. Well, fortunately, now you can get a Star Trek Red Delta Shield coin pouch. That's right. You can be that guy or gal at the register at the grocery store saying, wait, I think I have the exact change. Pull this thing out, unzip the Delta Shield, and start doling out those pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters.
While you're holding up everybody else that has a debit card.
Exactly. So they will remember you and your coin purse for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So we have that covered. But speaking of covers, what's next?
This is the worst iPad ever. Actually, the Star Trek The Next Generation pad journal.
Well, that sounds great. Why would that not be awesome? You get a pad. You can, like, do all your stuff on there. Why? What's wrong with that?
Well, doing all your stuff, if I hope you mean using a pen and paper, because it's a notebook with paper. So, yeah, you could give it to your kid. And hey, great. Oh. Writing? So hard. But on the inside cover, it has, a diagram like you would see the Elcars. How do you say that? Is it Elcars?
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say Elsars, but Elcars, but well, anyway, never mind. Elcars. You can see the interface on there, and on the outside, it has a hint of the interface as well. And it looks like any pad you've seen on The Next Generation.
Yeah. It looks like you can actually do something with it. But instead you just open it up and write things down.
Right. Hey, I think a while back at my old job, I got a notebook that looked like a Dell laptop from Dell. And I had the laptop that it looked just like, and if you were looking at it just right, you would have thought it was a laptop sitting there. Cause it had all the, on the spine, it had the ports like on the back of the laptop.
Oh.
And on the bottom, it has on the top rather, it has like the Dell logo, like if the laptop was closed, you know, the circle. It was kind of neat. That's reminded me of that.
Dude, you're not getting a Dell, but you're getting this.
Dude, you're not getting a Dell.
So, as disappointed as you would be to be thinking you're getting a pad and you actually do not get a pad, more disappointing than that, I can top that with this. This is the Star Trek Borg Cube Monitor Mate. Now, all this is a Borg Cube on a little stand. That's it. It's a little Borg Cube on a stand, and you're supposed to put it on top of your monitor. Now, I don't know if you remember back in the old days when monitors had depth. Well, now monitors don't so much. Monitors are almost like two-dimensional. They don't have depth anymore.
Not much.
So somehow you have to find a monitor, go out and buy that has thickness, and then you can put this Borg cube on top of it, and it will just sit there. Because that's all it does.
If you look down at the questions, the customer questions and answers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, first question. What does it do? Does it make noise or anything? Does it just sit there and look cool? And the answer, it rocks on the base like a bobblehead.
Yep.
Does it come, does the cube come off the stem? The cube is held onto the base with a spring, so when you tap it, it bobbles. Just like in the show, right? Yep. It looks like you can detach it without breaking it. I love mine. Does it talk? It does not talk.
It does not talk. It is a hard plastic cube on a spring and acts like a bobblehead. Yeah. That's right. You're thinking it does many more things than it actually does.
You know what else is funny is if you look at the top, it has like these three bullet points. You know, lots of times it's, you know, some quick features
right,
of features whatever.
Are, right.
So the first three or the three lines, raise shields and arm the photon torpedoes. Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. Add the Borg cube to the top of your monitor.
So you've got that. So yeah. I think this is really something you want to give to somebody you don't like very much.
Right.
Say, what does it do? Well, you'll find out. Just don't take it out of the box. You'll find out. Yeah. But actually, why don't you tell the person that it makes noise and all these sort of things and it lights up and let them figure out, oh, but it needs batteries. So you got to put the batteries in and let them try to figure that part out for themselves. All right, let's move off of that nastiness on to our next. What do you got next for us, Craig?
So this is one of those 3D optical illusion nightlights, and it's shaped like, great, I can't pull it. You're in the way, Clinton. I can't.
Oh,
you
know, sorry.
Your Skype window was in my way. I couldn't.
The miracle. I can be sitting like half the country away and getting in his way.
Yeah. So really it's plastic that's been laser cut. So you get it says NCC 1701. I'm not exactly sure which one we're talking about. It looks like TUS a little bit.
Well, kind of almost looks like one of those, Star Trek is not Lego. Star Trek is, what's the name that they're, the franchise that has the Lego-like things that has
the Duplo?
No, that's for kids. Well, anyway, it looks like it's put together with Legos. It's got all these bizarre shapes all over it.
Yeah, but it's laser cut, so it's flat. But when you turn the light on, it kind of you can see the etching, and it's shaped like it says NCC 1701. I have a feeling this isn't exactly licensed.
You think?
Yeah, because like I said, the base looks like Voyager, the bottom part of the Enterprise, but the top part, I don't know. Anyway, go take a look. They also have there's other ones on here. Superman. Oh, that's cool. Stormtrooper. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
But you can get this.
You can get it and you can give it to somebody and they'll re-gift it back to you probably next year. But
yeah, I never do that.
Now, my next on my list is, you all remember the AMT model kits?
Yeah,
that you could put together. You could put together the Enterprise, the Klingon battle cruiser, and the Romulan bird of prey. So that was really cool to be able to put that model together. Well, if you enjoyed that, what you'll enjoy even more is just having a poster of the box on your wall. That's right. Yeah. You buy a poster, and it's a poster of the box cover of that AMT model kit. It's less action packed than that Borg cube.
That is funny.
Once again, we can't claim all of these are things you really want, but they're available out there on the internet and you can get them.
Yeah. And just like the internet, there's plenty of people or out there on the internet. There's plenty of people with plenty of taste.
And what do we have next on your list for people with a lack of, with different tastes?
Yeah. How about some celebrity mixed guac bath toy ducks?
How about it?
Here's one. Here's a duck that looks like Spock. It's a rubber duck like you would put in your bathtub or something like that. You know, you'd see Ernie with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the bowl cut on top of his head. And it says Squawk instead of Spock, like a name tag on his shirt. And he says, float strong and flourish, you know, just like Mr. Spock said.
That was his signature catchphrase.
Yeah.
That is interesting. He said that in the pilot, and that's even cut from the pilot. You can find various cuts of, you know, the cage. That line, you won't find in any of them. It's because it got cut.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
It goes with all the other magical things that have been left on the cutting room floor in Hollywood.
Well, speaking of magical things, next up on my list, you would like to have your house be just like the Enterprise, wouldn't you? Of course you would. I know I would.
Yeah, of course.
Well, the next best thing to that is a next item, and it's a Star Trek TNG corridor door cover.
Yes, I saw that.
You put this on your door, and it looks like you're looking down a corridor on Enterprise D. It is essentially the Wile-E Coyote gift.
Oh, cool. Bam.
You know, and you'll have that friend that will, of course, walk down the corridor, and then you'll try to do the same thing and slam into the door. So if you want to fool none of your friends into thinking that, hey, I somehow got onto the Enterprise, then you want the Star Trek The Next Generation corridor door cover.
You know, I in my old house, in the office that I had in there, I had a little catty corner. It's like the closet was kind of catty cornered in the room. Mm-hmm. And I had a single door. And I was like, you know what? I was going to paint it like the TARDIS or something, the door. But if I had seen this, I would have totally bought it and put it on that door. Totally.
I see. So we should be getting this for you.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Get it for me. Yeah.
All right.
I'm down with that.
Not so much a Secret Santa anymore, but I'll work on that. And while I'm working on that, ordering that for you, why don't you tell me about the next thing on your part of the list?
Well, from one of the more memorable, scenes from Star Trek IV was Spock swimming with the whales. So here's the whales with Spock bobblehead. It was a convention exclusive, apparently, but now it can be yours. And it's in stock. And there's two whales, Gracie and George, and they're sitting there. Spock's doing his mind meld thing with one of them. Find out that Gracie's pregnant.
Yeah. Oops,
spoiler alert.
Oh my goodness. Oh, we need to see. We don't have the alert for that. We don't. You know. So yeah. Sorry. Close enough. No one's going to notice the difference. All right. We got time for one more. Let me throw one more at you.
Okay.
And then I think everybody's holiday gift list is full, complete. And this one comes to us from the Unemployed Philosophers Guild. And you can get yourself a little tin of dilithium crystal mints. Pink peppermint dilithium crystal, by the way. Fresh from the warp core. The tin says it right down there. Fresh from the warp core. Whether you're meeting Mud's women or transporting the Federation ambassador to Meniara 7, these genuine pink peppermint dilithium crystals keep your breath fusion fresh. So you can get those and impress everybody. And that about wraps up our holiday gift guide.
Yeah, let's go. Let's move out of here.
So if you want to have links to all of the things we talked about, by the way, there are more. So when you go to the show notes for episode 33 over at thetopicistrek.com, you'll find not only all these items, but many, many. Oh, let's see. I think there's another ton, maybe a 10.25 of links to more items over there. All right. But let's come back from our main mission and empty all those presents out onto the floor. We'll wrap them up later on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for a warp speed roundtable.
All right.
And very quickly, this game is a game we call Airlock or Shuttle Pod. Now, if you're not familiar with this game, go back and listen to the previous episodes. No, essentially, we talk about a character and we say, should this character be given a shuttle pod to safely go off and explore the universe, or should they be kindly shoved out an airlock. And this time around, we find out the face of Kienzer, that little fellow that goes around with Scotty in the Kelvin Timeline movies, played by Deep Roy. Hoping you all know who we're talking about. He's gray and doesn't talk.
The oyster guy.
Yes. So I'm going to put the question first to Mr. Craig Stepp. Should Kienzer be given the airlock or given a shuttle pod?
I'm going to say a shuttle pod because I think he's deserved it hanging around Scotty and taking his abuse for so much.
Well, the tribble in the background could say the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's true. But no, actually, Kienzer wouldn't say that either. He doesn't. I don't think I've seen him speak. No, he did speak. He did speak. Yeah, he did. He told Scotty that he said something. Oh well. But yeah. Anyway, I think he's too cute to throw out the airlock. Bottom line.
Well.
Final answer.
My final answer is I want him out the airlock.
Oh, okay.
I do. I mean. He's a character that just seems to be supposed to be cute. I don't know if he is or not. I don't find him cute, but I haven't really seen him do anything. The only time that he did something was in Star Trek Beyond, and the thing he did revolved around the fact that he had a cold.
That's true, yeah.
And to me, if your skill is, hey, when I'm sick, I can do something.
Must not is like hydrochloric acid.
So I, you know, dude, you gotta give me more than that. You can sit around and drink with Scotty. You can sit, you know, you don't obviously eat very much. You're not very chatty. But I don't know. He's taking up space, and I think I want to put him out into the space that he's taking up.
You know, I'll tell you. You know what he reminds me of, actually? And you bring up a point that I've thought about before was, you know, remember on the Jetsons, you had Astro and everything. And then there was they added it in later. There was this cute little fuzzy thing that looked like it didn't belong.
Yes.
That's Kienzer. What the hell is he doing here? You're right. They put him and it comes off a little cutesy. And I'm like, it doesn't really ring a bell with me that much. Although I kind of like him, but he hasn't done anything and he doesn't add to the story or nothing.
Right. I mean, he misses Scotty when he's gone. Okay. Then, you know, but no, not enough. So I'm going to be but the problem now is that there's just two of us. So he's kind of left in stasis.
Yeah.
And we need other people to chime in on this. So I'm going to put the question out to you, listeners of The Topic is Trek. Should our little friend be given a shuttle pod? Just go off nice and explore. Maybe, you know, go off with Scotty someplace.
Tune in next time to find out the fate of Kienzer.
Or should he just be saying, could you go in here for a minute? And then you shut the first hatch and you open the second one. All right, on that pleasant note, I think it's time to end the show.
I can see it now. You'd have him in the airlock before you hit the button. You go,
yeah. Oh, now you're talking. Now you're saying something, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, now you're trying to hack into all the stuff that's going on that panel. Well, I disabled that panel, pal. You're going out.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a whole end scene. I don't know. There's a whole thing going on there.
Oh, by the way, this just in, CBS has given Kienzer a spinoff series.
Yeah, that's right.
Nicholas Meyer available for comments.
Yeah. You want to be writing that? Oh, what? Oh, he's also going to be in the Picard series, you know. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
All right. But it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here.
All right.
You can find me, Clinton, at comedyforecast.com. Also on Twitter at Comedy Forecast, Facebook at Comedy Forecast, Instagram Comedy Forecast. You can play Comedy Forecast on the Google Home. You can play it on TuneIn, but you can't play it on the Amazon thing by saying play my show on iTunes. So go figure that.
You know, I did try to, I tried to play your podcast and the Technorama podcast on my Google Home. And for the longest time, it would say, I can't play this at this time. I'm like,
or it makes you commentary more than anything else. It's like, no, dude, yeah. I can't play this at this time.
And then I told it to play the Technorama podcast and it would go, here's the first episode of the Techno Something podcast. I'm like, whoa, no. And it started playing this other podcast. I had no idea. Like, no. Anyway, so, I may be straight out now. I don't know.
So go to our websites or go to iTunes or Google Podcasts. We're listed on those places.
Yes.
All right. And speaking of what's listed there, so I'm going to let you speak for Chuck about Technorama, a plugin for where that's listed and so forth, and
yeah,
how they can contact you. And
so Chuck and I do the Technorama podcast, and we're over at chuckchat.com/Technorama, and we usually post weekly. I say usually because when life and work gets in the way, you know, things happen. But we've been podcasting for quite a long time, so there's a lot of backlog for you to go back on both of our shows, yours and ours, to go back and listen to Fill in the Blanks.
That's right. We've got like 13 and 14 years worth of shows between our shows. So there's a ton of episodes out there to listen to. Actually, with those amount of links, there's several tons.
Yes.
We use our metric of how many internet links make a ton.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of the absent Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
Even two of us can't get it. I don't know.
You know what? Chuck can wear that red shirt.
Yeah, I think one of those gnomes would be appropriate right around now.